to welcome you to the Trauma Informed Educators Network podcast. This podcast is coming out of the Trauma Informed Educators Network Facebook group. I am so looking forward to talking to people globally about their trauma informed journey. As the principal of Fall Hamilton Elementary School, a trauma informed school in Nashville, Tennessee, I have learned that this is not a destination and it truly is a process of learning and adjusting. So this podcast will be speaking to guests all over the world about people who are just starting their journeys and people have been on this journey for many, many years. So I hope you enjoy our guests. I hope you learn something just as I am. And welcome to the Trauma Informed Educators Network podcast. This is episode number 43 of the podcast, and I actually have two guests on today. I'm very excited to talk to Dr. Kelly Munger and Megan Marcus. They believe that all learning happens through relationships, and our educational system has the potential to grow whole children. But educators' social and emotional development is a critical foundation to students' social and emotional development. Educators cannot possibly address the social and emotional needs of students or be truly trauma-informed if they have not processed and acknowledged their own trauma and social and emotional needs. They support educators as they do the inner work of exploring their triggers, attachment styles, and early childhood experiences. Like student social and emotional learning, educator social and emotional learning is not and cannot be a flash in the pan. Growing educators as whole people requires schools to become places where secure relationships and adult development happen every day in a regular course of the work. In the reality, many educators talk to them about the relational gaps they experience at school, the stress of loneliness, isolation, and toxic adult cultures, on top of sharing the burdens of the trauma that children bring. So, here's what Dr. Munger and Megan Marcus had to say. All right, Dr. Munger and Megan, thank you all for being here today. We so appreciate you coming on the show on this episode number 43 and sharing your expertise. So how are you? And the question I ask every guest is, what is your story?
Hi, Matthew. So great to be here. And hi to your beautiful audience. It's so wonderful to be among a bunch of trauma-informed educators. So my story, I actually never intended to go into education. My first professional aim was actually to be a therapist. So I was always drawn to people and human development and kind of understanding my own and others' inner worlds. And so I thought, well, I'll go ahead and head in the direction of clinical psychology. But all that changed when I had a really amazing opportunity to work with a professor on this book called The Social Neuroscience of Education. So some of you might be familiar with Dr. Lou Cozzolino and his work in interpersonal neurobiology. And I met Dr. Cozzolino right when he was about to explore this idea of bridging interpersonal neurobiology, this field that looks at the brain as a social organ, humans as social creatures. And he said, well, I want to bridge that into education. What are the implications for classrooms, for schools, for districts, when we know that it is through relationships that we learn, grow, develop, and flourish? And so I spent a couple of years with him researching, writing, editing this book, and essentially became really inspired by the power and potential of educators to transform lives when they are able to build secure relationships, secure attachments at the center of the classroom, at the center of schools. But I was also really struck when I realized that despite the importance of relationships to an educator's day-to-day job, that it's not something that's traditionally taught in educator preparation. I just thought that was a huge disservice to educators and students. And so because at the same time I was training to be a therapist, I also saw parallels. I was like, oh, both of these are interpersonal fields. Both of these at their best are about human development. Why can't we just adapt or translate some of the best practices and professional development from this very similarly interpersonal, you know, relational field? That was sort of this hypothesis that started me on a journey to found Fuel Ed, which is a nonprofit that works to fill that gap in educator preparation by developing the emotional intelligence, interpersonal skills, and self-awareness of educators. So that's my story, and we've been in operation since 2012, and I'm really excited to be here with you. I'll let Kelly share how she came along into my life and into Fuel Ed.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Sure. Thanks, Meg. And thank you for having us, Matthew. It's so great to be here. Let's see. So I will be as brief as possible, but I spent my 20s sort of between the special education classroom, spending all night in the hospital as a birth doula, supporting women emotionally during childbirth, and then myself becoming both a biological and an adoptive parent. And so my 20s were like the attachment decade of my life. And then in my 30s, I decided I wanted to become a therapist. And so I went back to school. I got a master's degree, was raising preschoolers and grade school age children and kind of doing all of that. And once I landed in the therapy room with mostly families and young children, I quickly realized that that 1 hour a week that therapists often have with a family is not nearly enough to provide the support and the resources that families are really needing. And so it kind of, almost in an innocent and naive place, I thought, why aren't schools a place where this kind of healing can happen? You know, almost feeling jealous of educators having the 40 hours a week with families. And so then, as one does, I decided to do a PhD. So I dragged my 3 children and my very, very patient husband, who is also an educator, across the country and got a PhD in special education and really spent those 4 years in the early childhood classroom, supervising master's students, becoming teachers, and setting that intersection between trauma and education. And then lucky for me, I met Megan during that time. And it was, as we say, love at first sight, because we really have very similar personal purpose and mission, which is to really focus on the self of the educator. And so here I am, and it's what I'm passionate about.
Well, that's awesome, because I'm an educator and I like when people want to talk about good, healthy yep. educators, right? Because let's be honest, we are in a culture in education right now. And I truly believe there's a major paradigm shift that's happening. And I give a keynote that's called In the Midst of Opportunity, COVID. I really think at this point is a pivotal time for us to be having this conversation, because things are going to have to change, right? And we know that. So let's talk about when you talk about the social and emotional health or the social and emotional learning of adults, right? Let's talk about the trends in education that you guys are seeing from your perspective. And I certainly can give some of my perspective as a practicing principal every day. But let's hear. Well, let's talk about those trends. What do you see? What do you hear? All of those great things.
Great question, Matthew. I think the first trend we, of course, need to talk about is social-emotional learning just at large. I think it's so wonderful that this field has gotten so much traction. It's becoming more mainstream, but it's such a missed opportunity that we really skipped a step, because social and emotional development for students, it doesn't happen divorced from a relationship. It happens through relationship. And the only types of relationships that really promote optimal learning and development, academic, social, or emotional, are secure relationships. And the only way you can build a secure relationship if you, as the educator, are securely attached. And so the best way to do social emotional learning for students is social emotional development for educators. We firmly believe that. And so I do think that is one really big trend out there right now, is this focus on student SEL. And there really needs to be a shift to understanding and taking care of the educators. And I think that brings me to another trend that we've seen. There's so much more attention in this moment, more than ever because of COVID, about self-care for educators, the mental health and emotional well-being of educators. It's what FuelEd's always been about, but now it's needed more than ever because of the trauma we all have experienced. But what I fear has happened is that self-care for educators has become this buzzword where it's like, take a bubble bath and download this mindfulness app, when really such a more intentional and thorough and deeper approach to care for educators is needed through collective care for educators, through relational care for educators, through healthy school cultures. So that's a really big one. I'd love for Kelly to kind of pick up there and kind of go more into what we believe is the appropriate self-care for educators.
Right. I love that, just the phrase collective care. And one word that we've sort of resonated with a lot at Fuel Ed is flocking. So the idea of a flock of birds, which comes out of Liesl Ebersohn's research, South African researcher, really looking at how, yes, we have fight and flight as a stress response, but flock is essentially a secure stress response. We can rely on one another in times of stress. And so, but of course, we all know, all of us have been around education or actually an educator. And we know that often educators report to us that their school is the last place where they might feel a sense of resonance, support, a sense where they wouldn't need to hide, lie, or fake. Mm-hmm. They could be themselves, transparent and vulnerable. And so I think that what you bring up is really interesting. The idea of collective care, I think people will really resonate with that. And you also hear a lot of messaging right now, right? Teacher well-being, teacher well-being, teacher well-being, which is awesome. It really is awesome. However, the how of that is much, much more complex. It actually requires resources. And I would say the resources would be time and space. And then of course the sort of scaffolding around relationships, right? How do we not only process our own attachment relationships, our own attachment stories, so that we can sort of remove that lens that we often see our lives through our attachment stories. So if we can make sense of that, we can actually see others more clearly. And then in addition to that, just the skills of secure relationship, right? Do we know how to mirror? Do we know how to empathize with one another? Do we know how to, maybe even more important, express our needs, our feelings? I mean, we know that these are skills that can be scaffolded for educators. And we also know that if we scaffold them for educators, that will have a cascading impact on classrooms and students. So I think that's the more important question, the how.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's a conversation that's needed to be around for a really long time, but it's starting to happen. And I love that one of the listeners in Australia said it's calling it friend, but they like the idea of flock. And as an avid cyclist and an old bicycle racer that now is in my mid 40s and I'm an avid principal, not an avid cyclist, I love the analogy of a flock, especially when you're talking about geese and how each of them feed off of each other to stay in flight. And if one ends up falling off, the others drop with it. It's the same in cycling. So I love that connection of I draft off of my teammates when I'm tired because they have the energy, and then I can fall up and pull sometimes when I'm feeling stronger, and you rotate, right? And I think that analogy is exactly what we need in schools. And for some reason, we just haven't made it there. Now, when I say we, I don't mean Fall Hamilton, my school. I mean us as a collective people of education. And I think before we started recording, we had a conversation about attachment. And I think that's one that we don't have enough in education when it comes to adult attachment. We talk a lot, well, not even a lot, to be honest, about children. But let's have that conversation about the impacts of adult attachment and adult experiences, whether it was in the childhood or as an adult, and how that impacts the day-to-day lives of educators.
Sure. So I think an important place to start there is just to acknowledge that our stories will shape how we relate to one another in the present. And so this idea of if we needed to protect ourselves early on, our bodies learn to protect ourselves in the present, especially when we encounter alarming or threatening or triggering, let's say, students or colleagues, just for example. And so the reason that looking at attachment is important is because there's sort of this common idea that the past really is present. And that's because our bodies and brains learn patterns, right? And so all attachment is, I think sometimes it needs to be demystified. Really what attachment is a pattern of relating. And so as we name our own pattern of relating, whether we're tend to more shut down and distance ourselves, or whether we tend to become anxious and almost entangled in our relationships, then we can begin to sort of reflect on that, hopefully with some self-compassion, make sense of the why, and sort of zooming out and making sense of that actually allows us to heal, especially if we receive empathy and validation for that story, right? Because often our more maladaptive relationship patterns began with pain and suffering, and even harm. And so really giving educators the space to do that work will allow any educator, truly any educator, to move toward a more secure approach. And by secure, I mean the educator who can show up consistently, give care, receive care when they need it. Like you talked about earlier, this idea of like, I'm dysregulated as an educator, then I need help. And the recognition that I can rely on others is a feature of secure attachment. Mm-hmm. But then also to be able to practice autonomy, right, inside of your culture, to be able to name your needs, to ask for what you need, to set boundaries, which of course is a requirement to be able to care for yourself, right? So we're kind of in a circle here of the idea of, hey, teachers, take care of yourself, take care of yourself, requires that a teacher be comfortable with setting boundaries, which usually requires that they have a sense of security in themselves.
And to be honest, it falls with administrators too. I mean, there's this sense of vulnerability that in administrators, that if I say I'm not doing well or I'm struggling or I'm not available on the weekends, that I'm going to, for some reason, lose my job. And that might be the case in some places. But I unapologetically disconnect all of the time. I'm very, very, very fortunate to have a little bitty cabin that's in east side of Tennessee, that there's no internet, there's no cell phone service. And when I go there, I literally can't do anything. And it's taught me that it's okay. Like, the world doesn't end. And the work that I left is there when I return. Like, it's still sitting there on my desk. Nobody came and stole it. And so I think we have to shift this paradigm that we as educators, one, have to have everything figured out all the time. Two, it's not okay to not be okay. That's got to change. And three, it's okay to voice our needs. And that's what I heard you say. It's got to get to the point of us being in a vulnerable space and saying, I'm not okay. I say it all the time. Okay. At my school, it's okay not to be okay, but it's not okay to not have support. That's what's not okay. Cause we're all not okay at some point in our careers.
Yeah. That really makes me think, Matthew, about how many of these kind of myths and really norms in education are like educators are up against when they're trying to be trauma-informed, when they're trying to grow in their own security of attachment. You know, things like, for educators are told don't smile till Christmas, and for administrators it's like you got to have it all together and take care of everyone all the time. And in reality, we're human. And to go back to the piece about attachment, if you're an educator out there thinking like, well, why should I spend time in therapy unpacking my childhood, what does that have to do with my job? In reality, all of us should be doing that because all of us have early childhood experiences that inform the way we relate and build relationships in the world and can get triggered in any moment, play out in any moment. But the truth is, it's just more of a job hazard for educators because their jobs are relational. And so for a principal to be able to give that support to teachers, for teachers to be able to give that support to one another is really, really critical because that's where the healing can happen and the growing beyond your early childhood attachment into that greater security of attachment where you can have permission to take care of yourself and not be that hero, right? So part of an early attachment style might have shaped you into a person who's getting your validation from serving others, from caring for others. It's actually what might have very well drawn educators to the field. There's a great book called The Drama of the Gifted Child, which I read in my counseling program, that really covers that idea that all the folks who go into helping professions, right? Whether it's therapists or doctors or teachers, are drawn to it because oftentimes of a childhood pattern where they had to be the caregiver in the family. They had to be the emotional regulator, keeping the peace. And they got really good at it. It actually became a gift, a strength. It's called the drama of the gifted child, not the drama of the messed up child. And then, you know, as educators, we segue that gift into a profession. But it's a gift that comes with a dark side if unexplored, right? How pushing yourself to the limit of burnout or being so dependent on others, whether your students or staff's approval, that you're kind of doing backflips in order to meet others' needs. So that's just like one example of how one kind of attachment style might not only impact the way you show up as an educator, but actually might have contributed to you choosing the profession.
Well, and there's this sense of martyrship that I don't understand, that we must sacrifice ourselves and that doesn't work. It's not how our mental health works. It's not how our physical health works. And I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to tell you, a couple years ago, I had a podcast on here and her name was Juliet. And she talked about how burnt out she got because other people didn't get what she understood about trauma, the adults. And she became angry and frustrated and jaded towards the adults in the building. And it happened to me 2 years ago. And I had an adult come in and say, you are not your same. You're being, I'm not going to use the word because there may be small ears. You're being a hole, right? And I'm like, wait, I am. And it didn't come down to anything other than I wasn't taking care of myself. That I had gotten to a space that I was overwhelmed. I felt like I wasn't doing a good job. And that mind game that you play with yourself, especially if you want to be an amazing educator, can drag you down. So what does Feel Ed do? What do you tell educators? How do we shift the paradigm? What can we do?
Great, great question. So Feel Ed, we have a framework that we utilize in all our trainings and programs. It's really this idea that educators need to know the science, the skills, and the self-awareness to engage in relationships. So science, I mean, the educators on this podcast are already probably deep in this, but understanding the science of attachment and trauma, what we see is just learning about the attachment styles, about trauma, about the impact on the brain. It's a total frame change because all of a sudden, if you're an educator and we're kind of raised up in traditional programs and you see student behavior through the lens of behavioralism, and now you're understanding that relationships and attunement and attachment are really the name of the game, and that a student's behavior in front of you actually has more to do with their personal histories or their safety needs in the moment, it's just completely different frame. So that begins to change behavior. The second thing is developing the interpersonal skills needed to build secure attachments, whether that's empathic communication or genuineness, being able to share your own needs. And then lastly, and most importantly, is self-awareness. So as we mentioned a few times already, it's actually, if you did not have a secure attachment in your early childhood, you're simply more likely to behave in ways that build insecure attachment in others, unless you go through the journey to develop what the literature calls earned secure attachment. Through reflection and relationship, through understanding your own story, you can actually change your brain, just like our students can, and grow in your own security of attachment. So it's so essential that educators, whether through a romantic relationship that's secure or a therapeutic relationship that they have, a professional relationship, any relationship throughout the lifespan, just one secure attachment can actually help you grow into greater security of attachment yourself as an educator. And then lastly, we think secure cultures are absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. So if you're an administrator in a position of power in a district or a school, how can you create those networks of support, the peer support, and an environment of safety for the teachers, for the administrators, that can ultimately allow everyone to thrive?
So I want to ask a question because this comes up a lot in trauma-informed ed, right? So when we talk about safety and security for the adults, a lot of times what people hear is, what does that mean when a kid is coming in and they're aggressive or a kid is dysregulated? How does that correlate, right, to supporting an adult and supporting a kid? Because what I don't want to mix up is that doesn't mean that we have to hammer kids with punishment or consequence to keep the adults safe, right? So it's this balance. It's this delicate balance of supporting both in the same mindset, right, of that healthy support and, to be honest, attachment between the adult and the kid. So how do you describe that? What do you say when you say healthy attachment for the adults to keep them safe? Go deeper into that. Tell us more about what that means.
Right. So I think what we're referring to is the idea that an educator would feel, to extend the idea of safe, would feel seen and soothed inside their school culture. And so for us, something that we've developed within Fuel Ed is a practice called stewarding, which we actually rotate every 6 months within our team. And each week we spend an hour with our steward. So we're paired off and we simply provide empathic mirroring for one another. We always have a space where we know that we can depend on reliable, non-dismissive care from one of our teammates. And so if you can imagine, after a few years, if he's rotated through most of your team members, you have this really strong web building of secure attachments across the organization. And so that is something that we know from the attachment science can be internalized, that actually helps us feel safe when we face risk, challenges, and triggers at work. And so it's less about how the student is behaving, right? Because we all know that we only have a certain degree of control over that. It's more about what are the internal resources of the educator when they are with the student? What can they access? Do they feel held by this really strong web of attachment and support? Or do they feel they have a sense and experience in their body of being isolated, alone, stranded with this child who is perhaps triggering them? Those are two very different experiences, even in our bodies, right? We can map that onto autonomic nervous system functioning and see that one teacher can be very activated in that situation and another can stay grounded for much longer and even push that SOS button, whatever that is inside your culture, to say, actually, I can't do this alone and I know someone's going to show up for me. So that's kind of our vision, that we actually believe that every educator could have that.
Well, and I mean, at the end of the day, and I've said this 1,000 times in my work, that this work really is about adults. When I say trauma-informed education, it really isn't about kids. It's about shifting paradigms on how we manage our own self-regulation and attachment, right? And how we stand in that space or the power of the pause to understand how we can support kids. And somebody said it, I think Michael said it here, that discipline is about teaching and not punishment. It's when we can stay regulated and understand that this is skill building and understand that when we are triggered, that's our own skill building. When I started this work 6 or 7 years ago, if you would have told me that a kid could do some of the things that happen on a daily basis in front of me and I don't get shook up because I have learned how to manage and learned that those triggers within me, I know how when that trigger happens, okay, now I know what my body feels like. I'm feeling this in my body. I'm feeling this in my emotions and how to keep that regulated. I would have called you a liar, right? Because it's work. This is work that adults must do. And I want to say, go ahead and sign me up. Go ahead and sign us up because I'm ready to do this work. This is what takes a school culture deep. This is what makes a school culture change the trajectory of kids' lives, is the work you just discussed, right? So give us an example of what it looks like. So if somebody's like, hey, I want to bring this into my school, what does that look like from your perspective and the school's perspective?
Yeah, good question. So we have a bunch of different trainings. Some are really much more intensive, which of course we always recommend that the deepest work happens when you have enough time and space for this. So we have a 3-day training called the Whole Educator Collective, Talk a lot about whole students, but as you said, this is really, it ultimately can't grow whole students without whole educators. And so just to kind of give you a snapshot into maybe one activity from that, we have this awesome exercise where it's a trigger card sort and a bunch of examples on each of the cards of like behavior you might see in a student or behaviors you might see in an admin or adult, another kind of fellow educator, because educators will tell us it's not the kids that are hard, you know, like I can handle kids all day, but it's like the adults on my campus. And so you start taking these cards, which just seem like these discrete behaviors. And then at the end, there's a way to kind of code them to see, oh my goodness, it's not just when like Johnny hasn't brought in his homework for the 12th time that really gets under my skin, or when my principal does X, Y, and Z. It's actually this theme of helplessness in others. It's this theme of, what's the word I'm thinking of?
Insubordination.
Insubordination in others. That's really, why does that get under my skin? And so they now all of a sudden feel really seen, because it's like, oh, that's going to make me flip my lid. That's really going to trigger me. And now I'm understanding it thematically. And then as we go through the curriculum, we begin to share, oh, your triggers aren't just random, right? They have to do with your own early childhood experiences when you were seen and tended to or not. And you can begin to make those connections. Then you go even deeper, being able to start to tell your story, your attachment story, with others who share the same attachment style. And that's just amazing, because all of a sudden it's a story that maybe you've never even spoken aloud yourself. Now you're hearing six other adults who actually have the same story, right? Like there might be different characters, but the emotional tenure, exactly the same. And so it's an incredible feeling to feel less alone in that, and to all of a sudden see yourself and to feel normal, essentially. That's really what starts the pathway to healing. Of course, we have opportunities to practice those skills, but the biggest thing is when adults start seeing themselves through their own attachment style, their own attachment story, they develop a greater compassion, for their child in them, essentially. And when you have that compassion for your own inner child, that's when you can begin to see other children and other adults through that same lens of greater compassion.
Yeah. And Meg, we call that story sight at Fuel Ed, this idea that we could see not only as we see ourselves through our own story, we actually, because of the way the brain works, we see others through the lens of their story. And that is how you begin to tolerate a lot more distress in the classroom. Because little Johnny doing whatever, you have this ability and capacity to zoom out and see he's living through his story and I'm living through mine. And those two stories are maybe knocking up against each other. But the ability to see that changes everything.
I'm sitting here thinking about the introverted educators in my school, and I'm thinking, like, I'm all about this, right? Like, I will tell you my story. I'll tell you the time I was 23 and I was told I couldn't come back to my school and play basketball until I went and did something. I ripped my shirt off and I went and cussed everyone out that I didn't like. True story. Let me just tell you, that was a lot of therapeutic processing and literally like a 20-second rant that I, anyways, here nor there. But I think about, what do you tell educators that are like, that I'm not comfortable in that space around my colleagues? How do you manage that? Because I apparently hire a lot of introverted people. I didn't know this until last year when I'm looking around going, wait, I hire a lot of introverted people. So now we're cognizant on who we hire and teaming and all. But what do you tell schools that are like, I don't know. I don't know if my staff is ready for this.
That was a little surprise, you know, as much as we try to prepare educators for the depth and this therapeutic, really a therapeutic professional development. Mm-hmm. There's always like, okay, you know, I knew we were talking about adult SEL, but like, I didn't know it was going to talk about my mom and dad. And, you know, like, there's always a little surprise, but we have designed the training in a way that builds safety. Of course, we're like hyper attuned to that. And so I think starting with the science of relationships, it's like changing that frame, starting to get folks more comfortable. Then you learn about the attachment styles in children, right? There's still this like distance from it. It's like, cool, these are tools I could use on kids, you know? And then when you see that, you start thinking about yourself. And it just creates safety naturally through the experience. We also have, our trainers are like really, really a big part of our training is just that sensitivity. and making sure they're constantly being attuned to the room in the way that like an expert, you know, trauma-informed teacher would be, noticing the emotional cues, noticing when there needs to be more time or more space or whatever's going on to name it. And to mirror the participants, not just say like, great answer, moving on. It's like every response is actually mirrored of the emotions and the thoughts. And so it builds a tremendous amount of safety where we get endless comments at the end of 3 days. It's like, I was with a group of strangers, because sometimes we'll do a school-based and everyone knows each other. And sometimes we'll do hosted with sure. a bunch of educators I never met. And it's like, they're hugging, they're crying. It's like, they've never met these people before. And I think there's something in human society and something in education that we're starved for intimate, vulnerable connection, or even just 5 minutes of being mirrored. It's like, oh, I feel so hurt. It's like so sad. Like it's really like a just water to a desert. And it's like, it's so needed, that deeper human connection.
I mean, it's powerful. And I'm going to give you another example of something similar. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Happy Teacher Revolution.
Yes.
By Dana, right? And I was at a conference and I set in a Happy Teacher Revolution circle, which was affirmations and connections. And I left going, oh my God, I feel more connected to these people than some people I've worked with for years. And it literally took like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and
crazy.
I think that's what I hear you. Like, you don't have to be colleagues with people to connect. Let's be honest, learning is social and emotional. We are social and emotional beings, whether you're introverted or extroverted. We are social and emotional beings. That's why when I hear social and emotional learning, it's a separate thing. No, it's not. No, we are all social and emotional. And so Let's dig even a little deeper, because I want to see this process. You said it's 3 days and I love the start. So if I'm going to take my staff through this, you start there, you build the understanding of the relationship science and all of that. Then you start taking people through the personal journeys. How do you bring it all together?
Yeah, that is really just the beginning. What we ideally want to see happen is that the schools then take a couple key cultural practices, such as stewardship. And another one that we've experimented with, we're just beginning to experiment with at Fuel Ed, growth sessions, which are basically every 6 months, the educators in small groups get together and first share their own kind of grows and glows over the last 6 months, professionally and personally, but then every other person also shares that. So it's this amazing mirroring experience where you're being validated, but you're also being pushed and saying, this is where I love you and you're amazing and these are all the great things, but this is where I see some weak points. And because of the safety and the relationships, it's incredibly encouraging and motivating to drive growth in educators. So there's a few school-based practices that ideally we want to see that educators bring back to their environments so that the learning can continue to unfold. And then things like get into therapy, find your own counselor, kind of helping folks do that deeper therapeutic work. And then lastly, we have some amazing educators that then go on to innovate in their own spheres in ways that we could have never dreamed of. You know, one school that we worked with came as a team, they left, and then they decided to create this amazing and very simple program where if we're started with the admin having like 1 hour of like listening, empathic listening time with their staff, it was so effective that they then recruited like a group of teachers to be that empathic listening ear to students and developed a referral system where students could refer themselves or other students who seemed to be in need. And they caught so many what would have otherwise been problems just by creating such a cool and innovative system. And then you saw like their test scores and their culture score, all, you know, traditional measures of school performance, like go up like nuts. And so we are kind of a theory of change. Our logic model is that we build emotionally intelligent educators who build relationship-driven schools. Once you grow the emotional intelligence of an educator and open their eyes to this, they're off running. You know, they can come up with so many more powerful and innovative practices, policies, and cultural changes than we could have ever boxed up and said, go and do this. And so that's really the idea, is like we want to build a movement around this of emotionally intelligent educators building relationship-driven schools.
Well, I just think of the idea of relinquishing the need to be in power. And I mean, power struggles. and it has to be like this because I said it has to be like this. Getting over that simple hump is a game changer. Then what you're talking about is drilling it all the way down into a cultural piece where you culturally become connected and mutual accountability for that connection and relationship. That's the powerful piece that's missing in so many buildings. Like having tough conversations with your colleagues about a situation, whether it was meant to be or not, but standing in that space of, hey, when this happened, it made me feel in this space, right? Not accusatory, but people are afraid to have those conversations for the sake of not being professional. And it's like, no. That's when things fester. It becomes cancerous. It becomes toxic. You're talking about integrating this into the roots of a school for systematic change. And I can't tell you how fired up I am. I mean, I'm like, yes. Like, can we just let you guys take over the DOE and say, here's PD number one for all United States schools. We're going to actually talk about the adults.
Sign us up.
I mean, so if people want to, like, if they want to get in touch with you and they're like, hey, because there's a lot of responses from those who are listening live of like, hey, I want to bring this in. Hey, I want to talk to the Department of Ed. Hey, can I share this podcast? Yes, yes, yes. All those are yes. How can they get more information? Where can they find it? And I have a feeling I'm going to be reaching out as well because I'm blown away. So where can they find all that information?
Sure. So the best way to start would just be honestly our website, www.fueledschools.org. And that's F-U-E-L-E-D schools.org. We have a list of our programs. We have what I think is an amazing blog. We have actually a lot of free kind of gatherings where you can come get a taste of what we do. And all are truly welcome there. And so we try to provide safe and sensitive spaces really at all times. And then, of course, we're on Instagram, and Facebook, and Twitter at Fuel Ed Schools. And do you have
you're not on TikTok? You're not on TikTok. You're not TikToking Fuel Ed information because I'm not on TikTok either. But I love asking professional people that because they're like, "Wait, what? No, not yet. No." Anyway, keep going.
I think the only other thing I'll add is something to like, we'll tease a little bit that we're actually in development right now with a video series on empathic listening. And so that's something that educators can do asynchronously, either as a whole school or district or individually, and it'll come with a PD guide. And it's really just the power of an empathic listener, power of an empathic secure relationship to heal trauma and breaks it down into the skill sets needed to mirror essentially. And then to build secure, empathic communities through that practice of stewardship. So we're really excited for that to launch this year.
That's awesome because I always offer my staff 3 minutes of uninterrupted eye contact for the focus of empathic listening. I never have anybody take me up on it. and if any of my staff were to be listening right now, they would be rolling their eyes because I talk about it so much in nauseam that they're just like, Porto, can we get over the 2 minutes of uninterrupted eye contact? Because it's just ridiculous. And I say that jokingly, and I don't really do that. And if somebody ever did take me up, I probably wouldn't do that. But that's not what we're talking about. What you're talking about is true work to shift the cultures and paradigms of education. I don't want to say schools. I don't want to say teachers. I really want to say education because this is the work we have to be doing. And at the end of the day, this is trauma-informed education. Trauma-informed education is about fixing kids who have experienced trauma. And I think we can't say that enough. It's about understanding as adults our own, managing that, figuring out our triggers, how to stay regulated in order to stand in that space so kids can experience an adult that loves, cares, and is stable, nurturing for them and be in a space of support even in the midst of some of those hardest days. In order to do that, we have to take care of ourselves. Thank you all so very much for being on here. I will be reaching out. And after this podcast is recorded, I want you to stay on because I do have a few more questions for for you. But I do want to remind everyone that we have the Trauma Informed Educators Network conference coming up July 19th through the 21st. It is virtual. Next year, we hope to bring back the in-person. And I think Megan and Dr. Munger would love that we do something called home groups, where we bring the same group of people after every two sessions together for a processing circle on the new learning and the connection. And we're going to continue to do that in the virtual space. We are going to have those home groups that are going to come back together. We have 48 sessions, two keynote speakers, amazing keynote speakers. One is his school was featured on a podcast called The Promise, which has just won the, it's up for the Peabody of Podcast Award, which is like the Grammys of podcasting. He's local here in Nashville. And the other is an amazing actor that's from Nashville who's been in The Lion King. He has been in Jesus Christ Superstar in New York on Broadway and has a story to share. And then, of course, we have an expert panel that is going to be there as well. I also want to mention two amazing partners in our conference. One of them is Stop It Solutions, which is they use safeguard technology and link students with caring adults to prevent the preventable by uncovering the unseen and intervene in an imminent and the earliest possible way in a reporting system, self-reporting system. And then we're also really excited to be utilizing partnering with Empower You, an organization that's dedicated to helping improve the access to vital social and emotional skills and support to build student resilience. And so you can check them out as well. They'll be there with us, along with 300 other disruptors who will be uniting. And so thank you for listening to the podcast. And as always, please, please, please wash your hands and continue, even though I'm vaccinated, to wear...